Good afternoon, calling State Affairs Committee to order at 3:41, very timely, Friday, March 23rd, 2018, in the Max Greenberg Room of the Alaska Capitol. Will the Secretary please call the roll?
Representative LeBoux?
Here.
Representative Birch?
Here.
Representative Johnson? Representative Tuck? Representative Josephson? Alternate? Representative Knopf? Representative Wolf?
Here.
Representative Kopp, alternate, Chair Vice Tompkins.
We have a quorum to conduct business. Change of schedule, given the uncertainty of whether there was or was not floor session at 3:30 p.m. today, so we push back the presentation until date uncertain, and we are under bills previously heard, hearing House Bill 83 from Representative Keto, a first hearing. At this time, Representative Keto and staff, please come forward, put yourself on the record, and present the legislation.
Thank you, Chair Christ Tompkins, and I am glad to be here, even though it is Tuesday, March 27th, not Friday, March 23rd.
thank you.
I wish it was the latter, but we are here today. For the record, my name is Sam Keto III. I'm the representative from House District 33 here in northern southeast Alaska, and the bill you have before for you is House Bill 83. Basically, what House Bill 83 does is provide an opportunity for people coming into state service, to working for the state, to either select a defined benefit retirement plan or a defined contribution retirement plan. It does not specifically change anything. It just provides for the choice. In that way, some people might call it a hybrid, but the idea is that individuals coming into state service that plan on beginning or continuing a career in state service would have the option to select a defined benefit retirement plan, and those that might be here and knowing that they might only be employed by the state for a short period of time would have the option to select a defined contribution retirement plan. Healthcare program is carried forward from the healthcare program that we have right now. A significant amount of the costs that we're seeing in retiree has been in healthcare. Significant amount of the volatility has been in healthcare, but over the past 15, 20 years or so that we've been dealing with the unfunded liability for the PERS program, actuarial science has gotten quite a bit better, and our knowledge of life expectancy is a lot better, which means the ability to predict the success of a defined defined benefit retirement program is much better now than it was when we had a fairly volatile investment market. And so right now our investment market is volatile in other ways but stable in some ways. And so this is a bill that is really all it does is reinvigorate or reestablish the defined benefit program so that we can add new members to it. We are under the understanding right now that the Department of Administration is looking at an actuarial analysis based on the provisions that we've identified in House Bill 83 and Senate Bill 52, which is the Senate companion version of the same bill, and there are some subtle differences at this point, but we are working to make sure that everything is consistent. I am available for questions. Also have my staff, Edric Carrillo, here, who's happy to go through a sectional analysis of the bill. But the overall is basically just what I presented to you.
Thank you. And maybe at this point, pause and see if there are any questions for the sponsor from the committee. And also would like to recognize Representative Johnson joins us at 3:44. Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's no secret. My concern is that we, I think we've got a $7 or $8 billion unfunded liability on the existing PERS defined benefit program, and I'm very personally very skittish about diving into a program where we have uncertain future liability. And I did ask somebody who was lobbying me on this regard. I asked her specifically about the actuarial aspects, and she indicated it was like a $20,000 bill to do that calculation, and they didn't have that. And I think just as a data point, I mean that's kind of what I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about running up the tab and incurring some sort of a significant future liability, as we roll forward. And I know across the country, it seems like everybody's kind of steering away from defined benefit programs. But and I guess through the chair, the question would be, what are you hearing as far as the actuarial assessment? Is just down the road someplace? Or?
Through the chair, Representative Birch, that was the final comment I had made. Our understanding right now as Department of Administration is looking towards doing and ordering a actuarial analysis of the bill as a defined benefit, defined contribution choice. So they are starting to work on the numbers. And I guess, as I mentioned before, the actuarials, a lot more data points have been able to be collected between the end of the 90s and now. We do have an existing unfunded liability. That liability was a perfect storm of different events that ended up getting us into a situation. One of the things that is a concern to me, and one of the reasons for introducing the bill, is to kind of address one of the things that you had mentioned in a different way, though. My concerns right now, in having reviewed individuals that have 401k as their retirement program, we're finding out that if you look nationwide, that those retirement programs are funded to about 52% of what a retiree is hoping to try and get to for retirement, which means that we have eliminated the liability for the state by having a defined contribution retirement program, but we've also put a whole bunch of people in a situation where they are not meeting retirement goals and having to retire with significantly less money than they had anticipated. That is universally happening with respect to defined contribution retirement programs because they don't fund a full retirement. And so having a choice is one aspect or one way of getting there. There are other states that have actually gone to hybrid systems which balance a sharing of the risk. And right now, with a defined benefit program, 100% of the risk is carried by the employer. With a defined contribution program, 100% of the risk is carried by the employee. And the employee actually has to bank more money under a defined contribution program in order to make sure that they are able to cover their own retirement, because they don't have the earning power of many different sources of funds. So they only have the earning power of their 401k, which means they are coming up significantly underfunded in their ability to retire. So perhaps looking forward, if we don't end up with House Bill 83 or Senate Bill 52 this year, there will be some interest in looking at how do we create a true hybrid system, or how do we share the risk between employer and employee. Because right now, with the defined contribution retirement program, we end up with a whole bunch of retirees that are going to need additional assistance in order to pay their bills, which is going to come back on the state in terms of senior benefits and some other programs that we have, because we are retiring people without adequate resources for a full retirement.
Thank you, Representative Keough. Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, sectional analysis.
Thank you, Chair Kreis Tompkins and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Edric Carrillo, staff to Representative Keough. I'll do a brief sectional analysis. Starting with Section 1 and 2, we clarify that teachers' retirement system defined benefit statutes apply only to employees who participate in the DB plan and did not convert to defined contribution. No employee can participate in both the DB and DC plans. Section 1 also puts all TERS employees on an equal footing by requiring them to offer new employees the choice between the DB and the DC systems. Sections 3 and 4 set employee contributions for the DB tier at 8% of the pay, while leaving prior tier employees' contributions unchanged. Sections 5 and 6 require a person receiving disability benefits under the DB tiers to seek work and receive a medical examination. It sets limits on the frequency of the exams. Section 7 closes the Tier 2 DB health plan to new hires and those DC members who choose to convert to the new TERS DB tier. Section 8 establishes the eligibility standard for retiree medical benefits in the new TERS DB tier. In the new DB tier, a member with 25 years of service may receive medical benefits partially paid by the system at any age. A member without 25 years must have at least 8 years of service and be eligible for Medicare. Disabled members also get system-paid medical benefits. A TERS DB retiree who does not meet those qualifications can buy health care coverage from the system but must pay the full cost of the premiums. Establishes a premium share schedule for retirees to pay a portion of their health insurance and requires actuarial adjustments to keep the pre-funding rate of the new DB tier no higher than the cost of the DC plan. Sets vesting rules for the premium share percentages so that the schedule can change during an employee's working life, but is fixed at the date of retirement. Section 9 clarifies that the TERS DC statutes apply only to employees who participate in the DC plan and did not convert to the DB. No employees can participate in both the DB and DC plans. Section 10 puts all TERS employers on an equal footing by requiring them to offer new employees the choice between DB and DC. Section 11 gives a newly hired teacher the choice between DB and DC systems. This is a one-time, irrevocable choice, sets timeframes and rules for the process. Section 12 clarifies that public employee retirement system, PERS, DB statutes apply only to employees who participate in the DB plan and did not convert to the DC. No employee can participate in both the DB and the DC plans. This section also puts all PERS employees on an equal footing by requiring them to offer new employees the choice between the DB and the DC systems. Section 13 sets the same minimum wage threshold for elected officials in the new DB tier as the 2004 reforms implemented for prior tiers. Sections 14 and 15 set employee contributions for the new PERS DB tier at 8% of pay, while leaving prior tier employees' contributions unchanged. Section 16 and 17 require a person receiving disability benefits under the PERS DB tiers to seek work and receive a medical examination, sets limit on the frequency of exams. Section 18 establishes an eligibility standard for retiree medical benefits in the new PERS DB tier. In the new DB tier, a peace officer or firefighter with 25 years of service may receive medical benefits partially paid by the system at any age. A peace officer or firefighter who does not have 25 years of service must be eligible for Medicare and have at least 10 years. Other PERS employees require 30 years of service to get medical benefits partially paid by the system unless they are Medicare eligible, in which case they require a minimum of 10 years. Disabled members also get the system paid medical benefits. A PERS DB retiree who does not meet those qualifications can buy health care coverage from the system but must pay the full cost of the premiums. Establishes a premium share schedule for retirees to pay a portion of their health insurance and requires actuarial adjustments to keep the pre-funding rate of the new DB tier no higher than the cost of the DC plan. It sets vesting rules for the premiums share percentages so that the schedule can change during an employee's working life, but is fixed at the date of retirement. Sections 19 and 20 put all PERS employees on an equal footing by allowing employees to return to PERS after terminating participation to hire employees the same way PERS employees do, and allows employees to earn service credits in the appropriate tier when working for those employers. Section 21 clarifies that the PERS DC statutes apply only to employees who participate in the DC plan and did not convert to DB. No employees can participate in both DB and DC plans. Section 22 puts all PERS employees on equal footing by requiring them to offer a new employees the choice between the DB and the DC system. Section 23 gives a newly hired public employee the choice between DB and DC systems. This is a one-time, irrevocable choice, sets timeframes and rules for the process. Section 24 repeals sections that let non-vested employees convert to the DB and DC and required employers to match the funds transferred dollar for dollar. Repeals sections related to political subdivisions that participate only in the DC plan, repeals a requirement that DB employees who refunded contributions from the system and return to work after July 1st, 2010 participate only in the DC plan. Such employees will thus be treated as new hires. Section 25 gives employees hired into the TERS and PERS DC plans who have not refunded out of those plans a 90-day period from the effective date of the bill to irrevocably convert into the new DB tier. Contributions move from the DC plan to the DB plan trust if they make the switch. Section 26 sets the procedure for the conversion election in Section 25 and allows administrators to adopt regulations related to the conversion. The choice of convert is irrevocable, and certain information must be provided to the employee. An employee who transfers receives credited service in the defined benefit plan equal to the value of the employee's DC account. If that amount is insufficient to buy the employee's actual service time, the employee may create an indebtedness to purchase the difference. If the employee's individual account has an excess, the difference is transferred into supplemental benefits system or the comparable account in the keeping with the federal tax law. Section 27 allows the Commissioner of Administration to adopt regulations to implement the and make specific bill provisions. Section 28 is an immediate effective date for Sections 26 and 27 of the bill. Section 29 makes the bill effective January 1st, 2019, except as provided in Section 28. Thank you.
Any questions from the committee?
Further comments or questions for the sponsor? Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on Representative Birch's question about unfunded liabilities, just from the 30,000-foot view, would having people paying into a defined contribution system reinstate the sort of funding of an unfunded liability? In other words, having people pay in would help paying out as opposed to where we are right now.
Through the chair, Representative Wool, you're bringing up a question that we are in active discussions with Department of Administration on. So there are two ways to really move forward. One is the way we're set up in the bill right now that provides for an option for a defined benefit program that actually is tied into the existing defined benefit amount. So we would basically be re-enlivening the defined benefit pool, which will make management of that pool a little different and more dynamic, because you have money now again going into the defined benefit pool.
Right. And, pardon me, I meant to say defined benefit, not defined contribution when I first asked the question.
Right. Okay.
The benefit is the one where people are paying in, and yeah, go ahead.
Right, through Chair, Representative Wool. So basically what our bill would do would be to add into the existing defined benefit pool, which would have result in that actuarial calculation being a little bit different, because it's no longer the defined benefit program that we have is no longer a closed program. The other option that Department of Administration is talking to us about is the potential of establishing a new defined benefit pool. Then we're managing two separate pools. We still have the unfunded liability of the existing pool, and then we're managing the defined benefit pool for the new the new adoptees in the new program. And so there are ultimately, when you look at the 30,000-foot level, the net result is going to be the same. It's just a matter of whether or not one pool might be able to generate more interest than another. But for all practical purposes, I imagine that the separation will be an accounting separation and that the funds will actually be managed commingled.
Thank you.
Further questions for the sponsor? Going once. Going twice. Seeing no further questions, I'm going to set an amendment deadline on this bill for 5 p.m. Monday, week from today, or week from this week. And we'll bring the bill back up before the committee thereafter, probably on the following Tuesday. With that, at 4:01 p.m., the committee is adjourned.